A bomb whose creation would tip the scales of global power. A nuclear physicist who sought to redress the balance. The Bomb, a podcast from the BBC World Service. Season 2, available now.
Hello and thank you for downloading this edition of Sporting Witness from the BBC World Service with me, Jonathan Holloway. Today we're bringing you the story of the first black rider to compete in cycling's most prestigious competition, the Tour de France. I've been speaking to former athlete Johan Jean about his journey from his Caribbean roots to cycling stardom. It's the 2nd of July 2011. And in the west coast of France, the flagship event in the professional road cycling calendar is about to begin. And as 198 riders prepare at the start of the race, the attention of the gathered media turns to one man.
Before the race, I was very focused, but also a little bit stressed. But it was such a big moment, and I just wanted to do my best for my team. So I quickly refocused my attention on the race.
L'envie d'être à la hauteur.
Johan Jean is about to become the first black athlete to compete in the 108-year history of the Tour de France.
My personal goal was to make it all the way to Paris and finish the race. I dreamed about riding through the Champs-Élysées towards the finish line as fast as I could cycle.
With the eyes of the world upon him, Johan prepares for the biggest 3 weeks of his life.
There was a lot of media attention on me, but I knew I had to stick to the plan and not let anything distract me.
And as the race gets underway, Johan has a quiet moment with himself.
I am not superstitious, but I am religious. I said a prayer and asked the Lord to be with me and protect me.
Johan Jean was born in the Caribbean island of Guadeloupe on the 25th of June 1981 and spent his childhood surrounded by the sport of cycling with his brothers and sister.
I come from a cycling family. My father was a professional cyclist and my three brothers were also cyclists. I also loved football as a child, but my father started taking me to cycling competitions to see my brothers compete, and that was what inspired me to start cycling.
And it wasn't long before Johan decided to follow in their footsteps.
When I was little and kids lost at football, it didn't seem to matter to some of them. But when I would go to see my brothers compete in cycling, I would see young people like me winning on their bike by their own strength. There was no one to blame if you lost and no one to thank if you won. It was all down to you. I thought, this looks easier, maybe I will win too. But I soon realised it was harder than I thought.
Johan attended the local school, but as the years passed, he had only one objective for life after education.
At school, there was a push towards getting a profession, but when I realised I had skills as a cyclist, I started concentrating on that early on.
And at the age of 17, the opportunity of a lifetime presented itself after a chance meeting with Jean-René Bernadeau, the sporting director of a professional road racing team in France.
The manager, Jean-René Bernadeau, loved Guadeloupe and wanted to find young riders here to go to France. I was one of the best cyclists in my category, so he asked me if I wanted to go to France and train more seriously.
How difficult was it moving to France and leaving your family behind in Guadeloupe?
It was the first time I left my family for a very long period of time, and the weather was very different. After being used to spending your life outside, I had to adjust to spending my time inside other than training.
And just how different was the training from what you're used to in Guadeloupe?
You train or race in competitions around 6 days per week, and I was probably racing or travelling between 90 and 100 days per year. It can be really hard on your family as well because you don't get to see your children as much.
Stage races, like the Tour de France, take many days of racing, often covering huge distances, climbing over mountainous regions or sprinting across relatively flat roads where riders can reach speeds of almost 70 kilometers per hour.
It can be very dangerous during sprints. When you are close to other riders and you are trying to place you and your team well, there can be a lot of contact with each other. Going downhill can be very fast and you constantly have to be focused. My job was to support the leaders and the climbers to make sure they are well placed and they are protected from the elements. Everyone has an important role to fill to make sure we all cross the finish line.
After a grueling introduction to a new way of training, Johan made great progress as a professional cyclist and by 2005 was competing in over 70 race days per year. He raced all over the world until one day in 2011, he finally received the news he had been dreaming about his whole career.
I found out 2 weeks before the Tour de France that I had been selected for the team. I was so happy because I had spent years training and sacrificing to get to this point. At the same time, I was a little apprehensive because I wondered if I was up to the task and if I could represent my team at that level.
How did it make you feel being first black cyclist to take part in the Tour de France?
When I was preparing for the tour, I never really thought about it. Once I got there, that was when people made me realise that being the first black cyclist to take part in the Tour de France was something people were talking about. I was happy that I was the first person from Guadeloupe to be in the race, but I was surprised I was the first black cyclist to take part. I did think it had importance because I realised I could encourage other cyclists to dream big.
So how common was racism in cycling?
It sometimes happened. Things like comments from other riders, words in other languages that were racist. It wasn't very common, but it did happen.
After years of dedication and training, Johan Jean was finally ready to realise his dream of competing in the Tour de France.
We finished the day in the top five. It was a relief and I slept well that night, knowing that I was where I belong.
Johan and his Europcar team found themselves in a strong position and for 10 days supported lead cyclist Thomas Vauclair while he led the general classification wearing the yellow jersey.
When you have the yellow vest, you are leading the whole pack of cyclists. Your job when your teammate has the yellow vest is to defend him and make sure you stay in front. At the start of the race, the team objective was to win some stages, but when Thomas Vauclair earned the yellow vest, the objective was then to make sure he kept it all the way to the end. Unfortunately, he lost the lead 2 days before the finish and finished fourth. Defending the yellow vest for 10 days meant being at the front, so I was a lot more tired at the end of the day. I also fell during the mountain stretch, so I had to go even faster to make up time. I also got the flu and found it hard to breathe, but you just have to keep going.
After 21 stages and 23 days of racing, Johan Jean's first Tour de France comes to an end. He and his team helped lead cyclist Thomas Vauclair to a fourth place finish, with Johan finishing 158th overall. He would go on to compete in another six Tour de France races before retiring in 2019, but says his first will always be very special.
The first one was my favourite. Discovering what it was like and experiencing the emotion for the first time is something I'll always remember.
Johan still lives in Guadeloupe, where he coaches young cyclists. And although the sport still has a long way to go in terms of diversity, he thinks his Tour de France breakthrough for black cyclists had some impact on the world of cycling.
I think it had a positive influence and hopefully motivated other black cyclists to believe that it's possible to participate. At the time, there were very few black athletes competing, but soon I noticed an increase. Not just in the Tour de France, but teams became more open as well.
Johan Jean was speaking to me, Jonathan Holloway. Thank you for downloading this edition of the Sporting Witness podcast. It was a Made in Manchester production for the BBC World Service.
September 1949, 4 years after atomic bombs devastated the Japanese cities of Hiroshima and Nagasaki, specially equipped US Air Force planes have detected radiation in the atmosphere. There can only be one explanation. The Soviet Union have exploded an atomic bomb of their own. A bomb they were thought to be years away from developing. How can this have happened? The answer is chilling. Season 2 of The Bomb, a podcast from the BBC World Service, uncovers a gripping true story of espionage at the very heart of the British-American nuclear bomb programs. Search for The Bomb wherever you found this podcast.